Chronicles of the Order, a short story anthology set in the world of Geist. Hi, this is Philippa Ballantyne. I'm the author of Geist and the author of the very first story in Chronicles of the Order. I just wanted to give you a quick heads up on the format of this podcast and what you can expect in the following weeks and months. All the short stories will be about half an hour in length and will be released on a fortnightly, that's a every other week to you American listeners, schedule. So you can expect something new in your podcast listening device twice a month. The very first story is written by me, and it's hopefully a little scene setter for you in the Geist universe, which is something that I've never podcast about before. And the kind of people you can expect to hear apart from my stories are people like T. Morris, Nobilis, PC Herring, and you'll get to hear from a few people that you don't hear quite so much in the podosphere, including my agent Laurie McLean. So I hope you really enjoy these stories. I know I have enjoyed having other people play in my sandbox and bring new things to the table that I didn't expect, and I just love surprises. So without further ado, let's get on to the story, which is titled In the Beginning. Life might be hard in the Highlands, but death came in a few regimented ways. Starving in the winter, falling from a cliff top, or succumbing to wet lung. Any of these earned the person a shallow grave in the loose rock of the graveyard, not far from the village of Arion. However, all these fates the people of the mountains accepted. More than that, expected. What they could never have imagined, however, was something different, something far worse. Sitting that morning on the edge of the mountains, looking down over her little village, Mira was content. Death seemed, for once, very far away. Unaware, as she was, of the changes and conflicts a world away that would alter all that. She and her kin might teeter on the edge of existence, here in the harsh grey, rock-strewn terrain, but they were far from seas, rivers, and civilization. Truthfully, she wouldn't have had it any other way. The Etia and their cities might offer healers, machines, and magic, but there were also plenty of dangers. Inhaling the clean air from off higher peaks, Mira smiled. Today was a good day. Today it was just the sheep, her son, and herself. The rock she leaned against was cool on her back, but the view could not be matched. Sharp rows of steep gorges and valleys were lined up like soldiers as far as she could see. She had her walking stick, her axe, her two dogs, Elim and Patu, and a little further away, Hadare was lying on a similar rock, basking in the early spring sun. He was a good boy, quiet as his father had been, but with the sardonic humour Mira remembered from her own long-dead father. Her family might be short of menfolk, but she was proud of the boy she'd raised all by herself. One day, when her own time came, Hadare would make a fine shepherd himself. Life was hard up here, but today it felt good. Perhaps the gods were upset at her complacency, or perhaps whatever the fates had in store had already been written. Elam whined and pricked up her ears, a sound that broke Mira's reverie and made her start up from the rock. The winter had been an especially harsh one, and the deer and the chamois had yet to venture up to the high pasture. This made early spring the most dangerous season. Predators were desperate after the deprivations of the deep snow. The great eagles and the peak wolves were ancient enemies of the sheep and shepherds, but Mira's first instinct was to look up and scan the sky. It was nearly a fatal mistake. Three wolves poured down over the ridge to the east of where she sat and toward Hadare. They were skinny, rangy beasts, but still stood as tall as a man's chest, higher on her boy's body. They were flowing towards him, grey and deadly. Even for starved wolves, it was unnatural behaviour. As she started to her feet, Mira still had time to think that. Only feet away, lambs and sheep were ignored by the wolves as they bore down on Hadare. It made no sense, and yet it was happening. Mira screamed a warning, her voice reverberating among those knife-shaped hills. The flock of sheep were scattering like a cloud of birds, breaking into two halves and racing up the slope, bleating all the time, desperate to escape the predators. Mira snatched up her Jalaska, her shepherd's axe, while her heart raced like a terrified hare's. Then spinning, she ran in the opposite direction of the sheep. She screamed again, though if it was to drive off the wolves or draw their attention to her, she couldn't have said. Either would have done, and yet neither happened. Ilum and Patu barked loud and leapt fearlessly down towards the boy. Instantly, they were transformed from placid, shaggy hounds to baying protectors. They got ahead of Mira in only a few strides, and she was left stumbling after them. Everything was a blur of movement that she could not track completely. The huge dogs reached the boy before the wolves did. Ilum and Patu repaying Mira's trust in them in barks and snarls that echoed around the valley. The wolves were underfed with no real strength, but Hadare was startled. He stood and stumbled back in shock as the predators rushed at him. Mira caught a glimpse of him raising his Jalaska up to defend himself, but then he was falling. Perhaps if she'd been faster, perhaps if she'd been closer, she could have been able to catch him. The sound of the back of her son's head connecting with the rock he had been sunning himself on only moments before caused a howl to bubble out of Mira's throat. Out of her peripheral vision, she could see the dogs fighting the wolves. The beasts did not retreat. Another strange behaviour. The canines were tussling in amongst the rocks, the thick, woolly white coats of the dogs blurring with the ragged grey of the wolves. The snarling and snapping was furious, but Mira was not worried. Her dogs were well fed, and the wolves were not. Perhaps they were rabid, perhaps just driven beyond madness by hunger. She didn't have enough time to worry about them. Her son's welfare blocked everything out. Hadare lay tangled among the rocks, his limbs twisted at odd angles, blood pouring from his head and his mouth. Mira dropped to her knees. "Dyrus, no!" The scream to her god was repeated back to her again and again through the mountains, mixing in with the bleats of the sheep and the sound of canine combat. She carried him down the hills in her arms, his blood staining her coat, and as she went, she managed not to cry. She had to get him better. She had to send for the healer. Those were the only thoughts running through Mira's head. Once in the door, she laid him gently in front of the fire. All this time he made no sound, and his eyelids fluttered as if birds were trapped beneath them. Mira was in a panic, but her mind still functioned. Her son would die if she fell apart now. Kyrie, her neighbour, was out pinning laundry on the line in front of her house. Mira stumbled over to her and clutched her arm, causing the other woman to let out a little shriek of shock. "Mira!" She pressed one hand to her collarbone. "Lord of the hills, you scared me half to death!" Her smile died on her lips, however, as she took in Mira's expression. "What is it?" The shepherd sucked in a deep breath, noting with shock how dry her throat was. Had she been screaming that hard? "It's Hadare. He's fallen and hit his head. I need Nuna. Where is she?" The healer had birthed every baby in the village for over 20 years and was also known throughout the Highlands for having a great talent for saving lives. Mira held on to that reputation now. Kyrie was a tough woman of the land. She didn't panic. She didn't ask unnecessary questions. She simply took her neighbour's hand. "She went down to Baylis. We got word some children were sick there." If Erin was a small village, Baylis was a bare dot. Only two families clinging to the edge of existence of the lower valley. In her head, Mira did the calculations. She could be there and back in an hour, if she ran. "I'll look after Hadare. You find Nuna." Kyrie rolled up her sleeves and gave her a little shove. It was the sensible thing to do. The older woman's legs were bowed with an old injury, and it would take her twice as long to reach Baylis. Mira nodded shortly and then spun on her heel. In her childhood, she had run these peaks for fun. That had been a good few years ago. Nevertheless, she now ran harder than she had then. Her eyes blurred as she struggled down the rocky path to Baylis, and all she could see was the crazy wolves and then Hadare falling. It replayed over and over in her mind, and every time it did, she repeated that Nuna would know what to do. Nuna always knew what to do. A stinging rain began to fall, the cool pinpricks providing some relief from her own overheated body. It felt like she would never get there, but when finally the crude stone shacks of Baylis appeared around a bend in the path, nothing had ever seemed so beautiful. "Nuna! Nuna!" Mira yelled, pulling to a stop between the two houses. But the only sound was the hiss of the rain on the rocks and the wail of the wind blowing down from the peaks. Suddenly, for no discernible reason, a shiver of cold ran up her spine. She knew the families here well. Both were cousins of hers. But suddenly, she wanted to turn tail and run back, which was ridiculous. She had no reason to want to do that. Panic was playing tricks with her mind. She had to find Nuna. Pushing aside the leather sheet that hung in front of the doorway of the house on the right, Mira went in. Her cousin would just have to excuse her lack of manners. However, as soon as she stood in the room, she realized that would not be a problem. The smell of blood filled her nostrils, reminding her instantly of a slaughterhouse, which was what the tiny home had been turned into. Her cousins and their small families lay stacked like cordwood just inside the door, while to one side was the body of Nuna, the healer's face the only portion of her recognizable as human. Mira retched. She was a woman of the hills and had seen much in her life, nursed her father and husband through terrible illnesses, yet her body rebelled at this much unnatural slaughter. Who could have done this? Nuna was a person of infinite value in the valley, and while blood feuds had broken out from time to time, none would have slain the only healer within a week's journey. With one hand over her mouth and nose to block out the stench, Mira examined the pile of bodies. There were no children there. Yet Kyrie had said healing them had been why Nuna went to Baylis. Where were the children? Staggering outside, Mira checked the other house. Nothing. Whoever had killed these people must have taken the youngsters. This day had been so beautiful, now it was ruined. The wind in the hills grew louder. The sound it was now making as it raced through the low tussock was like a tortured wail. Shadows seemed to slide among the rocks, though why this should frighten her was a mystery. Mira took to her heels and ran back the way she had come. If the children were out there with some murderer, she would need help from Arion. And then there was Hadare. Lord of the hills, without Nuna, what were his chances? Though the return journey was uphill, she ran faster. The wind was whipping at her heels like it wanted to devour her. This was a nightmare. Perhaps she had fallen asleep on that cool rock. If only. Reaching Arion, she did not go home. Instead, she stumbled through the village towards the deacon's home. Brother Sile was sitting outside, enjoying the broken sunlight on his face, just as she had been doing just over an hour before. He read her panic in a moment. The deacon was not a tall man, past his prime, but he rose to his feet and grabbed his walking stick. "Mira, what is it?" For a second, she wasn't sure what to tell him. The massacre in Baylis or Hadari's injuries? The people in the other village were already dead, those children long gone, while her boy was still alive. For a mother, it wasn't a choice. "Hadare," she touched his arm. "Hadare has fallen and I can't find Nuna." Her voice was thick in her throat, her eyes threatening to overflow. Brother Sile's florid face folded in genuine concern. He might not have the practical skills of the healer, but he had the power of prayer at his command. The Lord of the Hills would help. Mira told herself that as she turned and urged the deacon to her house. The grey-cloaked man ducked under the lintel and entered. Kyrie had Mira's boy tucked up and was sitting by his side on a low stool. She gave a deep bow to the deacon, but he bustled to her neighbour's side. "Where's Nuna?" she asked in a hushed undertone. "I couldn't find her." Mira swallowed the lie, telling herself that her only concern now was her son. "Brother Sile will take care of Hadare now." Luckily, Kyrie asked no more questions. She had always been so deferential to the deacon that in his actual presence she became nervous. She scuttled out of the house, and Mira was relieved for it. Now began the longest night of her life, the one where even her sheep meant nothing. Deacon Sile was a priest of Dyrus, of the High Rock, and she would have told him about the massacre. But then, what would have happened to her boy? Mira perched on her stool just at the edge of the firelight and watched him work on her diary. She kept her secret. There would be enough time for the dead later. Later, when her son was healed. She jammed her fingers in her mouth as the deacon bound Hadari's head and knelt over him. "Brother Sile," she found herself whispering. "Will he be all right?" The deacon glanced at her, his lips set over his white beard, his eyes darkened by shadows. "Only Lord Dyrus can say." And then he began to pray. Rocking back and forth at the boy's feet, the low drone of his words would have been comforting in any other situation, but Mira found her eyes darting between them. The night wore on, and eventually even the redoubtable deacon began to slip. His voice dropped to a whisper, and then faded into nothing, to be replaced by a soft snore. Mira realized with shock that the deacon had finally drifted off to sleep. It was not going to be enough. So she lowered her head and began to pray. "Lord of the High Rock, Watcher of the Snow, be with us. Protect us as the dog watches over the sheep." She repeated the words until her throat grew raw, and then rasping, and then no more was to be had. The house dwindled into silence.
"Mother."
The word was so low that for a moment Mira thought she was going mad. She jerked her head up, hope filling her chest. Hadari was looking at her. The light was very low in the tiny house, with the fire almost dead behind him, but Mira scrambled towards her son. "Oh, praise Dyrus, you're all right!" She pressed her hand against his arm, but flinched back. It was so hot, more than even a fever. "I'm not sure you should be giving thanks just yet, Mother." The venom in that word was something Mira had never heard in Hadari's mouth before. Her boy was quiet, solemn, and above all, loving. A cold rush of fear spurted up her spine as her son struggled upright. There was something strange about his movements, like he was a toddler who had to work really hard to find his feet. She couldn't move as he stood above her. Somehow, his lean form looked larger, as if it was suddenly occupying more space, which was impossible.
"Hadari?"
Mira whispered, unconsciously using the same voice she used on frightened sheep and dogs.
"You've been injured. You're not well. Lie back down and let us take care of you."
His young face twisted into a grin that she was horrified to classify as lecherous. "He's not injured, you stupid cow. He's dead." Horror blocked her throat, stopped her moving. She must have fallen asleep on that rock. This couldn't be happening. This was not her boy. Opposite them, Deacon Sile stirred awake, snorting and rubbing his eyes.
"Madari," he muttered.
"I'm so glad to see you up and about."
"Really?"
The boy's head turned toward the deacon. Mira couldn't say anything. She was frozen to the spot. She'd faced down wolves, spent nights terrified and alone on mountaintops, but now, faced with this atrocity of her son, she was dropped into such a pit of despair that she couldn't move, not even when Hadari, who was not Hadari, picked up the poker from beside the fire, nor when he waved it in front of the deacon's wide eyes.
"It was no thanks to your useless prayers, old man."
"Hadari!"
Finally, Mira's voice worked, but it sounded like a cracked and broken thing, as if she'd gone without water for days. The thing in her son's body shot her a glance over one shoulder. It was a look to freeze the marrow of her bones, but she was easily dismissed. As Deacon Sile struggled to free himself of the chair, the boy lunged forward. His mother had never seen her son so much as kick a dog, yet he was smiling as he skewered the deacon on the poker. Someone was screaming. Mira finally realized it was her own voice as the creature tugged the poker free. Deacon Sile stared up in horrified amazement at the boy who he had baptized and known since birth.
He still looked amazed as the same boy pulled the poker free and brought it around and smashed him in the face with it. The sound of bone cracking filled every tiny corner of the house, while blood splattered on the rough stone of the hearth. Mira let out a tiny, strangled sound that was not quite a word. The figure stood before the fire, poker raised, wreathed in shadow, and she could see nothing of her son there. How could this have all happened so fast? Her eyes darted over to the exterior door, where her Jalaska rested against the coats. She couldn't quite believe that she was thinking about it, even for an instant. Of course, you can't do anything. Whatever it was behind her son's dead eyes smiled. Far too many teeth were exposed. Her eyes followed the tip of the poker as he waved it back and forth in front of her eyes. I should kill you, you know, he mused. Mira had no defences, and she didn't move an inch. He should kill her. He had to kill her. No, the creature hissed. That would be a mercy. And there is none here. Not anymore. Instead, he shoved her shoulder with the poker, pushing her back onto the floor in an ungainly heap. It was as if the impact against it shook something loose. She began to cry. Practice weeping. The words dropped from his mouth, and she collapsed under them. He left her there on the ground, and the door hanging open. Mira repeated her prayers again and again, even with the cooling body of a deacon lying not 2 feet away. It made no difference. Eventually, screams outside woke her, the screams of her neighbours. Somehow she managed to find her way to her knees and then to her feet. Before she went outside, she managed to grab up her Jalaska, even though it hadn't mattered before. Outside, it seemed like her world had indeed fallen. Kyrie appeared at her shoulder, her hair loose and her eyes wide. Mira! Mira, by the gods, there is... Her mouth worked as she tried to search her vocabulary for the right word. A geist in my house! It was a name to be whispered over campfires, to terrify children to be good. It was not something to be uttered between adults with genuine fear. However, nothing made any sense anymore. Mira grasped her neighbour's arm, and together they ran to her house. The air felt strange in the close confines of this tiny front room, but Mira went forward bravely. It was easy to be brave in a situation that did not involve her son. Waving her Jalaska, she found she was alone. Kyrie's bravery had failed her, and she would not go past the door. A shadow moved in the back of the far hallway. A bit of darkness pulled itself away from the others and floated towards her. Focusing her pent-up frustration and desperation, Mira thrust forward with her axe. It made not 1 ounce of difference. The darkness floated on, but she recognised it. Kyrie's husband had died 3 years ago, wasting away with water sickness in the summer. He had been a good man, an honest one. Now he was shaped in darkness. He passed through Mira without word or acknowledgement and on. She would have screamed, but instead she backed out of the house, her mind jammed like broken clockwork. Kyrie's words bounced off her, thrown stones that made no difference.
What's happened, Mira? By the Lord Dyrus, what is happening?
She had no answers for her neighbour. The world was turned upside down, and the only man of learning the village had possessed was dead. Her son was dead. Out in the street, people were gathered, terrified knots of humanity, now resembling the sheep they worked, huddled together under the attack of a hawk. They flickered and shimmered as if they were underwater rather than writ large in the sky. Perhaps they would have been pretty, but they were accompanied by the sound that reminded Mira of that of ripping cloth. And again the question was repeated. What is happening? Mira felt the cold chill take over her entirely as she realised that they were alone, alone with the shadows.
The dead are walking, she said,
and though her voice was quiet, it cut through the hubbub of the villagers.
The dead are walking, and we cannot do a thing to stop them.
The chief stepped forward and pointed at her. The Lord Dyrus will protect us. Mira's smile was as bleak as a Highland winter. Our deacon has just now been slain. Don't you think if anyone was going to be protected, it would be him? He was just as helpless. Heathen, he roared back, his eyes wide and bulging. Your disbelief has brought this on us. For a second, Mira wondered if they might stone her right there and then. She was in such a state that the idea didn't bother her. Then the chief sprung around and screamed at the crowd, On your knees! We must pray and pray until Lord Dyrus forgives us. We must give him the supplication he deserves. As one, they dropped to the hard, rocky road, turning their faces away from the terrifying light show. Mira watched them. She had been raised to the religion, walked the holy paths with her father from an early age. But one look from the dead eyes of her impossibly moving son had destroyed all that. Their deacon had been a good man, and he had had no defences either, no more knowledge than she. They were all alone, with no one to help them. Their world was broken. She was broken. Mira let her axe fall from her fingertips. She would go and find him. Even if he were dead, she would follow her son. And maybe, if she was very lucky, he would take pity on her and let her follow him into the shadows of death. Maybe then, she too would walk. Thanks for listening. Chronicles of the Order is copyright 2010 and all rights are reserved by the authors. If you want to find out more about Chronicles of the Order or the mass market paperback release of Geist from Ace Books, then please go to booksoftheorder.com.